We'll start it again. Hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, January 25th, 2020. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We're not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We're not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. So thanks for joining us today. My name is Carol Worlius and my associate Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. Sometimes we cancel them for health. These calls are recorded and available on our website, www.indicatorinformation.com. They're also on iqdcalls.com and on YouTube. Jim has been under the weather lately, so he won't be joining us today. And while he appreciates your concern, he needs his rest, so he has asked that you do not call him at this time. My good friend Judy will be helping me out today. You know, as we get closer and closer to our expected RV, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law contract trust and why we think it is the best vehicle for you to protect your assets. And as always, your questions are welcome. So anytime you have a question, just do *6, and when we get in the queue, I'll get to you. A while ago, I read an article called The Matter of Security, which I found very interesting. While the author spoke mostly about personal security, I really liked his preface to the article, so I would like to share that with you today. For myself, like many of you, having financial wealth will be something of a new concept. We have seen wealth in movie stars, sports heroes, and the wealthy elite alike, but have never experienced this wealth personally. If you are like me, you say to yourself, I would never trade my soul for a single dollar, if that is being what wealthy means. To many wealthy people in the public eye, wealth equates to power, notoriety, and influence. The money becomes secondary to these things that they work so hard to achieve. Their status and image must now be maintained through greed and indifference, not through love and compassion. But for those who are reading this publication, your wealth is based on the humanitarian perspective where ego has no place. There will be those who wish to take away what you have so long hoped to possess for their own greed and power. Therefore, you will need to change the way you currently live and think to protect your newfound wealth so that you can help people through your foundations and charity, end quote. So this is where we come in. The common law contract trust that we provide will protect your assets from those who wish to take it away from you. There have been some questions lately about whether one needs a trust at all. From a practical, thoughtful standpoint, you do need a trust to protect your assets. From a banking perspective, you must have a trust or other entity if you receive more than $1 million. So the question becomes, what kind of trust do you need? So, Judy, can you take it from there?
I will, Carol. Thank you so much. Hello, everybody. I think all of us on this call have heard about all the different kinds of trusts: revocable, irrevocable, grantor, non-grantor, statutory law, common law, and the bank's skeleton trust. Carol, what's the difference between them, and is it that important?
Well, it is important because there are some very big differences, and it's a very good question. Revocable means someone, a judge, for instance, could say, revoke that trust and pay the person that is suing you. Therefore, there's no asset protection in a revocable trust. Irrevocable means no one, not even the judge, can tell you that. The assets are the property of the trust and not yours personally. That's how an irrevocable trust is so good at protecting your assets. Grantor means you have given or gifted assets into a trust. Non-grantor, in the context we use it, means you have irrevocably exchanged your assets into the trust. Statutory law means it gets its power and privilege typically from state legislatures. It can be changed as lawmakers see fit. Common law is based on the law of contracts and is guaranteed by Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution. Skeleton trusts, as I understand them, are statutory, revocable, grantor trusts. The real downside to these, other than no asset protection, is that the bank will more than likely become your partner, which is obviously not a good way to go.
Okay, great. Thanks, Carol. I understand that the trusts that you prepare are common law trusts. Some people think common law is no longer valid in the United States. What's the difference between trusts and other legal entities based on common law and ones that are based on statutory law?
Well, as I understand it, you know, if you're involved in this RV, as we all are on this call, we are aware of some terms that most people aren't aware of. Like nobody, very other people will talk about global currency resets. And, as I understand it, it's more than just about the money. If, as we've heard, NYSERDA and DYSERDA are announced soon, which we expect them to be, we will once again flourish under common law. As currency exchangers, we should not be worried about setting up statutory law entities or we'll be under the restored republic common law after DYSERDA's announcement. And, like you, I read the Dinar Chronicles and a lot of the other stuff, but I found something interesting on Dinar Chronicles about the statutory law and common law, so I'd like to read it to you. Statutory law consists of millions of laws. They change every year and are so numerous and complicated that they require well-paid lawyers to keep up with them. They have created a whole industry of lawyers that parasite off society because of it. Such laws are generally designed to benefit the few at the expense of many, the lawyers, the politicians, the big corporations, and the cabal's favored interests. Legal entities set up under statutory law are subject to these millions of laws and require expensive and complicated legal expertise to defend them. Common law, by contrast, has been around for millions of years and will continue to be around for millions of years. It rarely changes. It's basically don't lie, don't steal, don't violate the rights of others. This is the closest thing to natural law or universal law that is active in human affairs. It is still the underlying authority and is now hopefully returning in force. Trust and legal instruments that created under common law have far greater freedoms. They are subject only to the common law and are the sovereign and immune from the ever-changing statutory laws. They can go on generation after generation, well into the golden age, and flourish because they're based on what is timeless. The common law trust upon which ours is based has been adjudicated by the Ninth Circuit in the United States in the United States versus Dahlstrom in 1983, in which the government's own expert witness, Carl K. Crowe, testified that the trust organizations created by the defendants were valid legal entities. Indicator information is licensed to use the form and method perfected by the defendants in the above cited case. And I don't know anybody else that can say that. Also, on occasion, the courts have called common law trust or UBOs, unincorporated business organizations, contractual companies. An explanation of their function can be found in Smith v. Anderson, Chancery Division 247, 1880. The Smith decision establishes the validity and viability of these contractual companies, under the English common law jurisdiction beginning in 1880. This is important because the Smith decision has never been reversed, nor has its importance been nullified through the passing of any negating statutes in the United Kingdom or in any other common law jurisdiction anywhere in the world.
Wow, Carol, that's awesome. Thank you for that explanation. So how do we get started?
These common law trusts are actually contracts in trust format. Since one cannot contract with himself or herself, we use a third party to facilitate it. That person is the creator. Once the creator has completed his or her two tasks, he or she is released from all further responsibility, duties, authority, or liability regarding the trust organization.
Okay, so who should I name as the creator?
You can choose anyone, an adult child, your brother-in-law, your coworker, your neighbor, but they should be geographically close to you as you both need to sign several pages in front of a notary public.
Oh, okay, I get it. So I don't necessarily want any of these people to know about my currency. What do I tell them?
Well, I agree. Keeping your business to yourself is important. So I suggest asking that if they would help you out in some estate planning, which is the truth. Explain that the trust you're contemplating uses a disinterested third party to create or initiate the trust, and that he or she will have no future responsibility, duties, authority, or liability regarding the trust after signing a few pages. The creator's final duty is to name a first trustee. He or she can name anybody as first trustee. They can even name themselves. Considering that you were smart enough to buy this currency and smart enough to put it into a trust, who do you think they will choose as the most likely candidate for first trustee?
Me?
It's you. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, Carol, why is it important to be the trustee?
Well, the trust, the management of any trust lies with the trustee. With contract trusts, you may be your own trustee, which is often a big no-no in most statutory trusts. The trust's fiduciary duty is to conserve and improve the trust to increase the value of the financial ratings of the trust. The trust is not responsible for your personal debts, nor are you liable for any of the debts of the trust. And, you know, one thing to think about when you go to your exchange, the trustee of your trust has to be the one to exchange. So if somebody else is named as your trustee, whether it be a professional trust manager, whether it be an attorney, whether it be a bank, they are the ones that are going to have to be at the exchange, not you. So you need to be in charge of your money at all times. The trustee's power absolute, exclusive, and unlimited, and are recognized as general powers of natural or artificial persons to do or permit any and all things that are not illegal. This means that they may do absolutely anything that an ordinary adult sovereign person can do. Once again, you can be your own trustee, giving you full authority to do or not do anything you want. Very simply, it means that there is no one between you and your money, which I think most of us will agree is pretty important.
That's very good. Very important.
Yeah. You can name your spouse as co-trustee. You can name your children as successor trustees. You can add a bloodline clause to ensure that your family's generational wealth does not fall into others' hands. And we have added a spendthrift clause, so no one can hypothecate or pledge his or her possible share of trust income.
Okay, so, Carol, do you know how much currency that I should put into my trust?
You can put in whatever you have. And I would suggest putting all of it in, but I don't need to know how much it is. I don't care if you have $1 million or 100 TZM or anything in between or above and beyond. And that's one of the reasons we put blank lines before your listed currency. All I need to know is what kind of currency that you have.
And we can write it in by hand ourselves.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, excellent. Great. So will the creator have any access to the trust or the trust bank account?
Once they've signed off, they have absolutely, again, no authority, no nothing. So they have absolutely no access to the trust or the trust bank account.
Okay. So here's a quick question. What if I buy more currency once my trust is already established and sitting there waiting to go? What if I buy more?
The trustee, who is typically yourself, merely notes the purchase in a minute. You will never add to what is initially listed on Schedule A, because that is an initial being first and only exchange into the trust. Sample minutes are included in your trust and are also available on our members-only website.
Okay, great. So, Carol, what are the certificates for?
Well, one of the creator's duties is to temporarily take title to the assets, in this case your currency, and exchange it into the trust. The certificates that he or she signs over to you are evidence of that exchange. The certificates represent your right to a share of any distribution by the trust and becomes null and void upon your death. We provide two additional certificates for the benefit of your successor trustees, who most likely will make them out to themselves. Do not sign them. A lot of people see a blank line, well, I have to sign it here. On every line that needs to be signed in your trust, your name is going to be there, and it will be flagged with a post-it note. If there's no flag and there's no name, you don't sign it. It's, you know, pretty easy.
Awesome.
Okay. There are a few instances that we may suggest that you do something and exchange a certificate for it, but all that is explained on our website, and if you need help with it, we'll certainly help you with that.
Okay, great. So, Carol, do I need to keep minutes?
Well, yeah. Minutes provide a history of your actions, which will be especially useful to future generations of successor trustees. And again, we supply a few blank minute pages for you. You can handwrite your minutes, which cannot be altered like a computer file can. And should you choose to type them, insert a copy of the handwritten notes behind them. And Judy, why don't we pause here for a moment? We do have a question.
Okay.
Hang on a second here. Oh, Una, there you go.
No,
Una, are you there?
That must be an error. I didn't put in for a question. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Your hand has been up the whole time. Oh, no problem. Okay. Let's go back. Okay. All right, Judy.
Okay, so my friend told me that a trust isn't valid because it doesn't name any beneficiaries. Why doesn't the contract trust have any beneficiaries?
Well, in a typical grantor trust in which you give or grant your assets to a trust, has beneficiaries to whom the asset goes at your death and the trust then terminates. That's the big deal here. The trust terminates when you die. The contract trust that we use does not terminate when you do. You died, the trust did not. That's why we have successor trustees who take over the management of the trust upon your death. And as I said, typically, and when you die, your trust certificates become null and void. So typically, the successor trustee reissues the additional two certificates to themselves. That's why we have blank ones there for you. Did that answer that question for you, Jenny?
Yes.
Okay.
So I know you're not a tax advisor or lawyer or accountant. I understand all that. But in your opinion, what are the tax implications of the RV?
Well, we've all heard that the RV will not be a taxable event, but nobody really knows for sure. You know, I think it's prudent to be prepared. And I think I first heard that from Tony on TNT. That's how long ago that was. You know, personally, I plan to put 35 to 40% into a separate account. So if it's taxed, I'm ready. If it isn't, I get a big bonus.
Right,
An interesting point is yesterday I received an email regarding H.R. 25, I believe H.R. is House Resolution, which states, to promote freedom, fairness, and economic opportunity by repealing the income tax and other taxes, abolishing the Internal Revenue Service, and enacting a national sales tax to be administered primarily by the states. This was from last January. It was referred to the House of Wayne's Committee. I do not know if it's passed or been enacted. I do seem to recall reading that it's supposed to have taken effect this month. I'm not positive about that, but I was find it very interesting that it's not just a rumor we've all heard about.
Exactly. That's awesome news. So, Carol, if it's not taxed and I put all the money in the trust, will I be taxed when I take it out? How do I get money out front without paying taxes on it? Well, I'm sure we're all thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Again, you know, I'm not a CPA or tax planner. This is just my opinion on how we may be able to take advantage of this one-time tax break, if that we still have an IRS. You know, I think most of us have issues that we need to address post-RV. Whether it be outstanding debt, a new car, helping out friends, whatever, we don't want to pay taxes if we don't have to. So as the exchange, how about this scenario? Mr. Banker, I now have X million dollars. I would like you to put $100,000 into my personal account. Here is my account number, wiring instructions, or open a new account there. I would like to take $7,500 cash with me when I leave today, as well as a debit or credit card attached to my personal account. I will need these wires to be sent, and here is a list of cashier's checks that I need. I will need a pass-through account for X number of dollars. I would like to put the balance into at your bank for ABC Trust. Here is my paperwork. All you need, I'm sure, are going to be the abstract and the EIN. That's obviously pretty simplified, but I think you get the idea. But it's very, very important to let the banker know that the bulk of the money, at least for that conversation, is going to go into his bank.
Right, got it. So, Carol, why don't I just take it all in my own name? If it's going to be a taxable, non-taxable event, what's wrong with doing that?
Well, you know, as I mentioned earlier, from a banking perspective, you must have a trust or other entity if you're to receive more than $1 million. Now, I learned that a long time ago, but I've also recently read that you don't need to have a trust as far as the bank is concerned. But think about it. On the practical side, having assets in your own name can be reckless. You know, it can wreak havoc upon your estate plan when you die. And there's no asset protection. If it's in your name, there's no asset protection. Trusts are used to create estate planning and anonymity. Most folks have a will. Upon their death, their will gets probated. This means a judge determines the validity of the person's will. And here's the frustrating part. If anyone disagrees with anything in your will, that person or persons can sue your estate. Oh, by the way, it gets even better. Did you know that once your will is probated, it becomes public documents? That means anyone or everyone can read your will. A trust, on the other hand, works differently. If you have an irrevocable common law contract trust holding a property, if I have an irrevocable trust holding property, the second I die, the management of the trust transfers to the successor trustee. No muss, no fuss. Best of all, because the trust is a private document, no one can see behind the curtain. As your net worth increases, privacy becomes more and more important, and I think you will all agree with that. The first axiom in prudent estate planning is to own nothing in your own name, but to control everything.
Exactly. I totally agree. We have heard over the years that we need separate accounts for the dinar apart from other currencies. Does that mean another trust?
Well, the important word here is account. One contract trust can own several bank accounts. The answer would be no. The trust can have as many bank accounts in as many banks and locations as you feel appropriate. Personally, my husband and I will have our mother lode trust and secondary trust accounts at several different banks. And while I do not know this to be fact, I've heard many times over the years, if you plan to put money into an existing account, you must zero it out first. You cannot mix old money, meaning USD, fiat USD, with new money, which is, of course, asset-backed. And again, I don't know this to be a fact. I haven't even heard it recently, but I heard it a lot several years ago, so it might be something to consider.
Yeah. I've always been told close, if it's a personal account, open a new personal account and close the old one. You shouldn't commingle.
So I agree.
I believe you're right. I think you're absolutely right. So, Carol, here's what a lot of people ask me. How do I get money from the trust?
Well, there's a lot of ways. As a trustee, you're entitled to a salary. And while this is taxable income to you in our current situation, I think it's still a good idea. You can take as much or as little as you determine you need. And if you decide you're going to start off with $10,000 a month and that's not enough, you know, give yourself a raise. If it's too much, you know, back it off a little bit. You're also entitled to a share of a distribution, much like a stock dividend, if you, the trustee, decides to make one. Again, that is taxable income. You could let the trust pay for your business expenses. Suppose you are thinking about buying property in Europe. Well, why not make it a working vacation? Talk to realtors, pick up business cards, brochures, etc. I'm sure you'll be able to meet a lot of business contacts on the golf course, tennis court, marina, etc. Maybe the trust could contribute to the cost of those memberships. While I wouldn't try to write off the cost of everything, this is certainly a good way to pay for some of those expenses. You can also borrow money for big-ticket items like real estate and new cars. You must make payments, though, even if it's just a nominal amount for interest. Otherwise, the IRS will consider a gift and be taxable. Another method is to have your mother-lode trust create and fund additional trusts to purchase that new house or fancy car. That way, the new trust owns the asset from day one, it is not a taxable event, and you don't have to make payments.
Yeah, I like that, Carol, a lot. Do I need more than one trust, and can I put other assets into the same trust as my currency?
Well, we do not recommend commingling assets in what we call your mother-lode trust. This is the first trust and will hold the bulk of your money and should not be exposed in any way. While the mother-lode trust should be sufficient for now, it will surely want more as your business and property acquisitions grow. And if you've listened to our calls, and I know most of you have, we recommend the use of a management trust to deal with public spending, like buying real estate, cars, etc. The mother-lode trust should always be private.
So the mother-lode would fund the management trust. That's just a straight take it from the mother-lode, put it into the management trust. And that's still not taxable.
That's correct.
Yes, what I thought you'd say. Great. So, Carol, what other trusts do you offer?
Well, we have many secondary trusts, management trusts, obviously, charitable trusts, real estate trusts, vehicle trusts, investment trusts, etc. And, you know, some have chosen to use the management trust as their banking arm. This account will receive funds from your mother-lode trust so that it can function as your purchasing or lending arm. Hypothetically, it functions much like the branches of a tree. It has more exposure and it's easier to break or penetrate, but it isn't an account that connects to some levels of the outside world. When you set up this management trust, Place adequate funds in this account to easily cover your prospective purchases and to cover several outgoing expenses for easier manageability. It can also fund your personal checking account for daily and personal expenses. However, it can do that. However, that's where I would go back to being compensated as a trustee for the Mueller Road Trust and have that be a bank transfer. You can do it from either the Mueller Road or from the Management Trust.
Okay. So if I understand this correctly, as long as you're transferring from Mueller Road into additional trusts, it still remains a non-taxable event.
Only on the first time. You can only do that when the trust is created for it to be a non-taxable event. If you put money into the trust, to another trust, let's say you've got your Mueller Road, you have a management trust, and 10 years down the road, this is assuming we still have the same tax structure that we have now, 10 years down the road, oops, I need to put more money in this management trust, it will be a taxable event.
The management trust would be the one that would be taxable.
If you move money after the initial creation of the trust, it will probably be a taxable event, of course, depending on our tax structure.
Right. Okay, great. So this management trust sounds very interesting. Would you mind telling me more about it?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, we've talked about many other trusts, but, you know, right now, pre-RV, you don't need all of those trusts. But post-RV, you will want them. As one might imagine, taking care of all the mundane issues dealing with ownership can be very difficult and time-consuming. For that reason, we suggest using the management trust. This trust will have its own EIN and bank account. This trust has full power to dispose of the properties and complete control over its management, such as paying insurance, maintenance, repairs, upkeep of the home and property, etc. As trustee, you still control the assets in the trust and the income they produce. And we do have samples of management trust contracts on our website.
Okay. Now, I recall reading fairly recently about a maintenance trust in some of our earlier literature. What's the difference between a maintenance and a management?
Well, a few months ago, we reintroduced our management trust. For those of you who have read our multi-trust account information, it was called a maintenance trust. However, some folks took the word maintenance a little too literally, so we decided to rename it management trust. It's a much broader stroke this way. The management trust simplifies some of the issues associated with multiple properties and multiple vehicles. So imagine three different real estate trusts, each owning its own property. One may be your primary residence, one may be a vacation home, and one may be an apartment building, say, with 12 units. They all require attention, be it maintenance, insurance, property taxes, collecting rents, etc. In this scenario, each real estate trust would have its own bank account to pay for these expenses and a repository for the rental income. It could prove to be a headache, wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
We have a solution and a way to simplify these issues. We suggest the management trust is less complicated and convoluted to handle these issues. A properly funded and prepared real estate management trust can simplify issues by contracting with individual real estate trusts to control the funds, disperse funds, collect funds, much like an escrow account. It is responsible for all the issues related to property ownership. It will have one bank account with bank cards and checks to be used when appropriate. It can also be managed online. Banking and accounting will obviously be less of a hassle if there's one instead of three. This trust, like most of your trusts, will be funded by your Mueller Load Trust. And the same principle applies to multiple vehicle trusts. I mean, let's face it, cars do not require bank accounts or EINs, but they do require maintenance. Insurance, license tabs, inspection, maintenance, regular maintenance, tires, oil changes, gasoline, cards, etc. You know, a vehicle management trust would contract with the individual vehicle trust to handle these chores from one bank account. The vehicle trust would also be funded by your Mueller Load Trust. So let's take a little break here, Judy. We've got some questions, okay?
Okay, sure. Great.
Okay, Una, are you there for real this time?
Yes, this is for real.
Okay.
You were saying something earlier on about, doing a new trust and the funding for the first time, you said? would be non-taxable?
That's correct.
That is?
Yes.
Okay, I mean, you don't really know how much you're going to end up using, but how do you work around that?
You got to do some planning, you know. So we sit down and say, how much is this management trust going to need for the next 10 years or 12 years or whatever? And, you know, take that number and I'd say, you know, multiply it by 3. So instead of funding your trust with, say, $100,000, make it $300,000, make it $3 million, whatever you think you're going to need. So then it's non-taxable for the first time because it is an exchange. So your mother-in-law trust is going to put X amount of dollars into, say, your management trust. The certificates go back to the mother-in-law trust because the mother-in-law trust is the actual funder. Whereas when you created the mother-in-law trust, you personally exchanged your currency into the trust. And that was a non-taxable event. Even if it was money, if it's a non-taxable event, it's because there was an exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, further down the line, you can't do more changes. So that's why only the first one is non-taxable.
So would you suggest, like, for example, if you have developed another trust, would you loan money from the mother load trust into the new trust?
Well, if you do a loan, I mean, first of all, you know, fund it initially to begin with whatever amount you think is reasonable. If it comes down, you know, a few years down the line, you need some more money, you can fund it with a loan, but you do have to be aware that you do have to make at least interest payments or something to that effect. Now, you know, as I said, all this may change. All this may change. If the IRS goes away, all this may change. So it's really difficult to give you those kind of answers right now.
Right, right. But if it stays as it is now.
If it stays as it is now, yeah, that would be the way I would do it. If I find some years down the road that my management trust needs more funding,
mm-hmm.
I would loan money to it.
Right, and back to the mother load.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Gary, you're up next. Gary?
Yes. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Question on the management trust. If we have a number, let's say we want to put $10 million or something like that in the management trust the first time, and then later on we want to buy a house or a car or something like that, and we want to create a new trust for that, will the money that we put into that trust be taxable? I don't know if I'm
say
asking the question.
Yeah, say it again.
If we have money in a management account, well, I don't have a management trust set up right now. I can't afford it at the moment. But if I want to set up a management trust later and put money into that, would the first time that money is put into that, would that be taxable or would that be not taxable? Or is it only non-taxable at the time of the RV?
It's non-taxable whenever, long as it's the first time you create and fund that trust. So even if it's 5 years from now, even if it's, you know, 5 months from now, it is non-taxable because it's an exchange.
Gotcha. Now, if I want to buy a new car or a new home a year down the road or something like that, because I didn't have this planned in my head at the time, and I want the trust to buy it, would I fund it from the management account or would I fund it from the motherload account?
Me personally, I would fund a brand new trust from the motherload account.
Okay. Okay. I think I have it clear in my head. My head's spinning at the moment, but okay. Thank you very much. I think you answered my question.
Ah, thanks, Gary.
Okay.
Okay, McKinley, how are you today?
Carol, how are you?
Hi. I'm well, thank
good.
You. How are you?
Good, good. Listen, there is 6 minutes in the trust. So the first minute that you write, that would be number 7. Am I correct?
Yes. In the case of a couple like you are, there are 6 minutes. In the case of a single person, there are 5 minutes. But yes, it would either be 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Okay. I'm just trying to get that clear. So the first minute, which I wrote one, that would be number 7.
That's correct.
Okay, okay.
So for instance, this is January, and as you know, we suggest that everybody write an end-of-year minute. So let's say you got your trust last year, so your minute number 7 will be at an annual meeting, at the annual end-of-year meeting of the Board of Trustees, blah, 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 blah. That would be minute number 7, unless anything else happened in between. But, yep, you got it.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Okay, area code 702.
Hi, Carla. This is Rose. How are you?
I'm fine, my dear. How are you?
I am good, you know. Sorry that I wasn't able to listen to all of the calls, but I keep listening to the replay.
And, oh, good. Glad to hear.
Yeah, and I have been wanting to ask some questions, but I am not able to join the actual call at the time, you know, so I was just listening. So anyway, I had a question. During exchange period, since we will be exchanging our currency into our trust, everything will be, it's in the name of the trust, and then will they allow us to get from the exchange funds, will the bank allow us to get portions of those money to put to our personal needs? Is that allowable?
I don't know. You know, let's go back to what I talked about.
Since the exchange funds was exchanged in the name of the trust.
I understand. So let's go back to my scenario and what happens when you're actually there. You can ask them for cash. You should be able to ask them for debit cards and cashier's checks and stuff like that. What they are going to be able to do for you at the actual exchange, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. You know, nobody knows what nobody knows. You may have to wait till the following day or a couple days later when you meet with a trust manager or wealth manager. But I think you should be able. I would bet you walk away with cash.
Yeah, I know. But then you don't only need a small amount. You will be needing some sort of, you know, a big amount in such a way to, you know, to give to our friends, our families. And are we supposed to be asking them after the exchange or even before the exchange that if this is exchanged in the name of my trust and this is already the exchange fund in the name of the trust, can we apportion some of this money to this personal needs that I want?
I don't think you're going to be able to do that. I don't think you're going to be able to do that at the actual exchange. That's just my thought. I don't know.
So I should be asking them before the exchange happens.
Maybe when you make your appointment. But you know, like I said in my little scenario, you can ask for cashier's checks. You can ask for wires to be sent. So let's say you want to send say $500,000 to your son in the Philippines. See if they can do it by wire at that time.
But again, I understand that since it's exchanged in the name of the trust, then we are not supposed to use the money for personal use because that is the trust money.
But you are the trustee, right? As long as you have a reason to gift anybody, you can write it down in a minute. And you've documented what you've done.
Okay. I understand that. Okay, thank you, Scarlett. I have another question.
Okay.
So we have our trust. And then in the event that we wanted to have another trust, which is the management trust, now how are we going to fund this other trust and what is the procedure? You mean to say that we have to create other trust from the first trust, or
yes,
just
so the mother, you are not the investor in the mother load in the management trust. The mother load trust becomes the investor. So you know, go to our website, you fill out the application, and then when you go to the bank, you're going to say, okay, Mr. Banker, my mother load trust is going to put $1 million into this management trust, and that's how you're going to fund it.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's always through the banker.
Yes. Yeah. You're not even going to have, you're not going to have tax, you're not going to have a debit card, you're not going to have anything for your mother-in-law trust. You're right. All your mother-in-law trust is going to be in person or some kind of relationship, or even if you do it on the telephone, he knows who you are and you know who he is. So there's nobody messing around with your account.
So if I have to create this management trust from the mother-in-law trust, so which means that the first trustee is the investor or the creator or the grantor.
No, the first trustee will still be you. The first trustee will still be you.
Yes. But the grantor or the grantor of this, the investor of this management trust would be the first trust.
No, the investor or grantor, I mean, it's not a grantor trust, but would be the mother-in-law trust. The mother-in-law trust is the one that is going to exchange assets, money, into the management trust. And the management trust then gets the certificates instead of you. But the creator of this management trust, like I said, can appoint anybody he or she feels would be the right person, the responsible person to be trustee. So don't you think that they would nominate you to be the trustee?
Of course.
Of course they would.
Yeah. I agree. So I was because in the first trust, it's me who is the, there is a creator, and I was appointed as the first trustee. And then in this situation, if I have to have this management trust, it will be the first trustee who is going to be creating the trust.
No. Okay. All right. So let's go back to how this trust is created. There's a creator, right?
Yes.
And he's the one that initiates this all, right? And the second person is the exchanger or investor.
Yes.
In the mother-in-law trust, you are the exchanger investor because you exchange your currency to the mother-in-law trust and the creator for which you got back certificates, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then the only other thing that the creator has to do is to appoint a first trustee.
Yes.
And seeing how you are the one that was smart enough to buy the currency and smart enough to put it into a trust, you are the logical choice to be the first trustee, okay?
Yes.
So that's your mother-in-law trust. But now it's time to do the management trust. Mm-hmm. This time you are not the investor. The mother-in-law trust is the investor into the management trust. There's still a creator. There's still a creator. And that could be, let's just say, Joe Doe. So Joe is working. Anybody can be the creator. Yes, yes. So let's just say Joe Doe is working with the mother-in-law trust and you as trustee to do this. So you're going to create this management trust. And then Joe Doe still has to appoint a trustee.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the most logical person to be the first trustee would be the trustee of the mother-in-law trust, which is yourself.
There you go. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay?
Okay. Yes, I follow now. Okay. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. All right.
Yeah, it's clear. Bye-bye. Thank you, Carol. Thank you. Can I have another question, Carol?
Sure. Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's always your teaching with Jim that it's always we only have one trustee for our trust. But I heard some information that it's not very logical to have just one trustee. That there should be two trustees. What do you think about that?
You want to hand over your power to somebody else?
Of course not. But in
let me explain. In the case of a married couple, typically the husband and the wife are both trustees.
Yes.
In the case of a single person like yourself or like Judy, let's say you're thinking, okay, my house is I've already named a successor trustee. But I'm thinking I need some help right now. So you can elevate one of your successor trustees to be a second or co-trustee, or you can just name a co-trustee that's not even a successor. So let's just say, let's use Judy for an example.
Mm-hmm.
Judy and I don't live that far from each other. Let's just say, okay, and she's not feeling well.
Yeah, example is just me because I am alone.
All right, so you're alone. You're alone.
Yes.
And you figure, okay, this trust is a big responsibility. I need some help.
Mm-hmm.
I need to nominate my son, my friend, my brother-in-law, somebody to be my co-trustee, so I make sure any decisions I make, at least I'll have run them by somebody else. Now, whoever this co-trustee is has to, you guys have to agree on whatever you do. But at least there is a little extra protection there because there's two of you instead of one. In your case, Rose, I know your family is all in the Philippines. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you would have to find...
What it is true, I have successor trustee, but they are just successor trustee. So I am just alone. I am just one.
Well, I mean, I can't help your personal situation. All I can do is tell you that in your situation, I would find somebody that can be a co-trustee. Even if your family, let's say your son is in the Philippines, you can have a telephone meeting.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
You can decide what to do. He is a co-trustee. He will have to sign a minute. You can fax, you can email it to him. He can sign it, send it back to you.
Yes.
But at least you will have a secondary. Is that working for you?
Yes, it's working for me. And so,
okay,
so I can assign, being the first trustee, I can assign a co-trustee by just making a minute into the
Yes. Yes, okay. And that there's a sample of that minute on the website.
Okay, I'll go check it. So, thank you, Carol. At least that helps me because, I heard some information that when in terms of that, it's always good to have there will be two trustees in case of,
You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, because, if you are just one trustee, you are taking advantage of everything because you are the only one making the decision. Whereas if it is in a board or you have a co-trustee in that matter, so the decision is not just by one person, but it is just, agreed with two or more.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you, Carol. Yes, thank you, Carol.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Take care. Okay. Area code 847.
Hi, Carol. This is Bob in Michigan.
Hi, Bob.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on what we talked about yesterday and alert your listeners. So that they don't have to, or they may not have to go through what I went through yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I was coming to that. I haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay. Well, it's. You want me to talk?
Go ahead.
Or, no.
Yeah, go ahead. Of course. Yep.
All right. Well, I found out my mailbox from the box shop. I remember that I hadn't received my notice, which I thought was due the 1st of February. And so I was going to call them and ask them to send me an invoice. And the number that I had wasn't working. And it said, this number is not in working service. So it's kind of sent off a whole series of events that I had to go through to get a hold of Brooke, the owner there. I did finally talk to her yesterday and found out that her business is closed.
Oh, my God.
Basically, she still has the boxes accessed to them until the 1st of next month. She said she sent out letters. Of course, I didn't receive any, so I can't vouch for anyone else. But so anyone that has anything with the box shop, it is locked and closed, and she's got the actual boxes in her home right now. I ended up, I called the Chamber of Commerce. I looked on Google Maps and called her neighbors and and tracked her down, and she finally returned the call. So it was a long process. So just be aware of that.
What a disappointment that is, Bob.
Yeah, it sure was. And
oh, my gosh.
So just wanted to alert y'all.
All right, thanks, Bob. I was going to say, plan on talking about it in a little bit, so thank you.
Okay, all right. Have a good day. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Okay, Judy, are you still there?
I'm still here, sweetie. I've been looking at real estate to purchase post-RV. I mean, have we talked enough about that, do you think?
No, I think we can talk about it a little more. Okay. The question of purchasing property has really come up a lot lately. Because I know probably all of us are looking at real estate. While you can borrow money from your mother load trust, it does require a loan or security agreement and payments of some kind. We feel the easier and cleaner way to do this is have your mother load trust create and fund real estate and vehicle trust like we just talked about. The advantages of this are less paperwork, no loan payments, and the property is titled in the trust at the time of purchase. We have recently been told that someone else said that one trust cannot fund another trust without being taxed. Well, that may be true of some statutory trusts. It is not true for the contract trust, and we have the expertise to do this. Again, a lot of this stuff is on the website. Like me, many of you have your eyes on property right now, but obviously cannot purchase it until the RV. We suggest that when you do purchase the property, you do it in the name of the trust that you wish to set up. I have done this purchasing cars in the past and was not questioned about the trust or any trust documents. If you are entering into an escrow agreement for real property, you may also use your own name followed by and other assigns. And we will try our best to have your real estate trust completed by the time your escrow closes. Excuse me. Whether you are funding real estate, vehicle, or management trust, we suggest you put enough money in it at the outset, like we just talked about. For instance, if you need it, are planning on single piece of real estate, you need only one real estate trust. It needs to have enough to cover taxes, insurance, maintenance, and the like for many years to come. So you need to plan for that now. If you're planning on multiple pieces of real estate, you should consider the management trust to take care of all those expenses. So again, be sure to plan accordingly. And if anybody out there is a real estate agent and has anything to add, I would welcome your comments.
I'm a licensed real estate agent in Virginia, Carol, and what I know about putting real estate agents in general hear the word trust and they get very frightened. They just aren't educated about it. So in my suggestion is to work with an agent that knows that you're going to buy your property and put it in a trust. It'll make your life easier. And just ask them, are you familiar with purchasing property in my trust? And they're either going to say yes or no.
Good point. Really good point. Thank you, Judy.
You're welcome.
So this next question goes back to what Bob just said. My trust is domiciled in Wyoming. Do we need to keep that address? But in order to maintain that state income tax-free status you have by domiciling there or in any other tax-free state, yes, you must address that. That address must be maintained. The $125 or so for the cost of the mailbox is inexpensive insurance compared to the tax savings you may realize. You know, again, we just heard of the box shop in Cheyenne, to whom we have been sending clients for years, is closing. We suggest using or transferring to Shipping Plus in Evanston, Wyoming, and I have all the information for it. We also have a couple places in Washington. They will all allow up to 5 trusts per mailbox, and you will need to complete IRS Form 8822B to document the change of address.
Oh, dear sweet Jesus.
Yeah. And again,
I'm sorry.
I know. I mean, it's especially for people like yourself who have multiple trusts,
Exactly.
Yeah. So, as we mentioned before, you have to use the trust correctly. Have all trust business mailed to that address. It can be forwarded to you later. Send a certified letter to the trust for approving the domicile is in that state. And, most of us listen or hear of the many dinar calls out there, or currency calls, however you want to call them. Many believe this RV is about to happen, so it is time to be prepared. Having a complete personalized contract trust at the time of your exchange proves you have done your homework and plan to make a big difference with the windfall you're about to receive. I have even heard such preparation may even garner a higher exchange rate. I don't know for fact, but that's what I've heard. We are all aware that many currency holders may be currency rich, but cash poor right now. So we have seriously reduced our prices for currency holders. You know, our trusts are now $19.95 for your mother-in-law trust. Secondary trusts are just $14.95. And I have to warn you, these prices will go up post-RV. Now, many of you have asked if Jim and I will be around post-RV. You know, we're all, certainly all ready to retire. Jim and I will be here to take care of your trust needs for 6 months post-RV. Our staff will be on board considerably longer than that, so we will be able to get new trusts out to you. And we all will need a couple of weeks or so to take care of our owner changes and setting up new bank accounts, etc. So we're just not going to be available for the first couple of weeks. So, Judy, I'd like to thank you for your help today. As always, you have a lot to contribute.
My pleasure, Carol. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So I'd like to thank you all for your time and attention today. My name, again, is Carol Werlius. I am the Central Time Zone and usually available from 9 to 5. If the RV does indeed happen next week, Jim and I will be unavailable for a couple of weeks, as I just said. We will return for about 6 months, but we will have staff available to create new trusts for you. You can reach me at 877-333-5018. My email is info@indicatorinformation.com. So have a happy and safe weekend, everybody, and go RV! Thank you.